Context Podcast is proudly sponsored by Delta Wines and Brick and Mortar, our everyday go-to with sustainability built in. Delta Wines are vibrant yet balanced, made to be enjoyed on special occasions. Brick and Mortar was founded in 2011 and has worked to create the European wine drinker's California wine. The wines are small lot, single vineyard sourced from Napa, Sonoma County, and Mendocino Ridge. In addition to tasting good, they also help you feel good with an eco-friendly packaging and environmental nonprofit donations with every purchase. Buy online at winesforchange.com. Also, use the code CONTACTS to support us and get a discount. The presentation is beautiful, the wines are great, and you'll be supporting saving the earth. What more do you need? Again, that's online at winesforchange.com. Discount code CONTACTS at checkout. Drink Element is a healthy alternative to sugary electrolyte drinks. Each grab-and-go stick pack replaces essential electrolytes with no sugar, no coloring, no artificial ingredients, or any other junk. Element is thrilled to be releasing a new limited-time flavor this November, Element Milk Chocolate. I drink Element every day to support my workouts and being on the court and in the classroom. As a member of our community, Element has a special offer for you. Claim your free Element sample pack. You only cover the cost of shipping. Get yours today at drinkelement, that's LMNT.com/contacts.
Elroy's Fine Foods, the Uncommon Market. A revival of the community market, promising you an uncommon shopping experience and the finest of groceries and prepared foods.
When Chloe and I first envisioned what Elroy's Fine Foods would become, we wanted to build a market that was focused on building community. A beautiful store that not only sells incredible foods, but also prioritizes environmental and social responsibility, and provides the community with a safe space to shop, eat, and hang out.
Elroy's Fine Foods is located in Monterey, California, offering the most delicious prepared foods, curated groceries, certified organic produce, a full-service bulk food section, fine cheeses, natural wines, local beers, and humanely raised meats and sustainably caught seafood. Elroy's Fine Foods, the Uncommon Market, 15 Soledad Drive, Monterey, California.
Hello, and welcome to Contacts, a podcast dedicated to bringing you practical ideas from coaches sharing what they have learned throughout their career. I want to open the door into my network of contacts whose innovative, reflective, and diverse coaching knowledge may offer ideas to enhance your experience. I'm your host, Justin Klein. Welcome back to Contacts. We are blessed to be joined this morning by Tyler Costin, founder and owner of Savvy Consulting.
Man, thanks. Has anybody ever told you that you've got a face for TV, but a voice for radio? Because like, you're not only handsome, but like you have a great voice.
No, I appreciate that. One of my colleagues actually is doing voiceover work right now, and I'd love to get in that hustle because allegedly it pays well.
Absolutely.
Okay. So Tyler, thanks for being here. And yeah, because you wear a million different hats and we met through PGC years ago and have stayed in touch, I would love if you could help us ground the audience in what it is you do. How'd you get into coaching? What was your background? What jobs have you held? How did you start this consulting? Just take us through the timeline.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for anybody that's listening, the theme that I hope you take away from every one of our conversations is innovation unbound by tradition. I think that in order to move yourself forward as an individual, to move your program forward as a leader, whether it be in business or in sport, or really to move your team in a specific season forward, the more you're bound by tradition, the less movement and growth you're going to have. And the more you're able to blank slate it or do what I call get in the sandbox, the more you got a chance at doing something drastically better It may not be better, but you got a chance to do something drastically better. Most people coach the same season 10 years in a row. They live the same year of their life for the last 40 years of their life. And one of the things I share with all the people that I consult with is they want to be a day 12 person. And I steal this analogy, and I'll answer your question eventually, I think. I steal this analogy from a book of ancient history some people know as the Bible. When the Israelites were set free from slavery in Egypt, they were promised the land of Judea. And by ancient maps, it would have been a journey of 11 full days to walk on foot from Egypt to the promised land. They would have arrived on the morning of the 12th day. If they had just set out, set their goal, they had just been innovative and gone. It took them 40 years of wandering in the wilderness to make the journey. They weren't day 12 people. And so my hope is to help everyone be a day 12 person, not a 40-year person. And maybe that's in their personal finances. Maybe that's in their relationships. Maybe that's in their coaching. Maybe that's in their leadership, whatever. We don't have an information problem. We've got a transformation problem in today's society. And so my hope is to help in some way be a catalyst, be the impetus for people to do something drastically different. You know, to improve is to change by definition. To improve is to change. And to perfect is to change constantly. I think too often we think we can improve by running it back and doing the same thing over and over again. Just like Albert Einstein said, the definition of insanity is to do the same thing over and over again and expect different results. Like, we all know that information. And yet we do the same things. We don't change our diets. We don't change our environment. We don't change the people that we're hanging around. When in doubt, make a change. Move and the way will open. And so that is my message. Now, how did I get there? By not changing, by not changing and feeling the pain of that. So I was never intending to be a basketball coach. When I finished my playing career, I was going to go be a lawyer. I love learning. I love arguing. I love finding a new perspective. And so as I was getting ready for the LSATs, a coach, a friend of mine, head coach of a women's college team said, hey, while you're taking these upgrade classes, why don't you come be the assistant coach? And I said, fine. Will you pay for my school? Yeah. And so I did that. And my first year as an assistant college coach, I thought I knew everything. And I was like, what? No, give me the ball. Watch. Look how easy this is. And I did it. And I threw them the ball. Said, why can't you do it? And I'm like, we have lazy, stupid, unmotivated players that they just suck. I'm a great coach and they're terrible players. And I coached that way for 2 years, just doing the same thing over and over again. And it was always the player's fault if they couldn't get it, until someone smacked me in the face, someone that I really respected, and said, Tyler, you're one of the worst coaches that I've ever seen. And I was like, what? And so that really set me on this journey of really saying, okay, how can I become better? Because I assumed that I knew everything. And I was so addicted to that journey of improvement, having never wanted to be a basketball coach, that then I said, this is what I want to do. Because there's few other vocations where you can innovate daily. You've got another practice to innovate. You've got another learning to innovate. A lot of vocations, especially early in the vocation, you just do the same thing over and over again. You punch the clock, you write the email, you punch the clock, you make the sales call, whatever. But I became addicted to innovation. And as I have a wide range of interests, I think that most of the innovation that I've been able to learn and been able to make has been from a non-basketball space and even a non-sport space. So I think that's what's maybe a little bit unique about me, is I'll read a book about how to count cards and I'll take that innovation and apply it to basketball, or I'll learn something about how firefighters fight fires in the forest and I'll take those mental frameworks and I'll apply it to basketball. So as I went on and flipped from the women's side of college to the men's side as an assistant and got to coach at a small Division I level, continued to innovate, and then realized that I wanted a different lifestyle than just the more transactional approach of recruiting players to keep your job and move up and make more money. I really had a heart for transformation. And that's when Mono Watsa, the president of PGC, pitched me on coming on board to help him build PGC, and did that for 13 years and got to build both a very impactful experience for thousands of athletes all across North America, but also got to build an amazing team of directors, as I got to create the curriculum and recruit and train all the directors that run these transformational 5-day experiences. And so that was an amazing laboratory for 13 years. where I got to source the best curriculum I could worldwide. I got to adapt it. I got to learn how to be a master teacher and a master trainer, and then got to train some of the best teachers that I've ever been around. And it's forced me to become better. And so I think that sort of pressure cooker of constant innovation to make sure that your curriculum is the best and your training is the best in the world has allowed me to iterate. And so now embarking on this new journey of, okay, how can I take all those lessons where I've trained the best teachers and the best curriculum to get the best results in just 5 days. Now I've taken all those lessons with what I'm doing with Savvy Consulting. There's people that are business savvy. There's people that are tech savvy. I want to help coaches be coach savvy. How can they apply that wisdom to get better results faster with their teams? Mm-hmm. Because most coaches coach the same season over and over again. They pull out the same practice plan mm-hmm. from last year. They wonder why their teams don't get better. They are only as good as their talent. And so I am so pumped up that every coach I've worked with is outperforming their talent right now. And like all you have to do to level up is go find an expert and go all in. And it's that simple. Like if you want to get to the next level, find someone that's been at that level and just copy everything that they do. It's that simple. And so that's what I'm really pumped up about doing now with Savvy Consulting is bringing innovation to the tired tradition of coaching.
Thank you. It's great because now I'm just processing where I want to go. That is going to strike the balance between serving me selfishly and at the same time, like helping the people that are listening, which is what this whole podcast was designed to do. It was, let me go into the phone contacts and share wisdom with other people. So I'm going to keep this about others and we'll circle back later to talk about my needs.
Absolutely.
Here's what I would love to start with. And I'm going to go somewhere else afterwards, but your father is a professional golfer. Those of you that don't know, we'll let Tyler give a quick soundbite on that. But someone who is constantly striving to be the best, and there is a process to that. What have you stolen from watching that or these business leaders you're working with that you can directly apply to sport or in this case, basketball? What nuggets were directly transferable that you've used?
Absolutely. It's funny you mentioned that. So we're down here in Phoenix, Arizona right now. And my dad actually just walked by. He's 65 years old and he just got back from being trained by one of the best physical trainers in the country. He actually trains NBA players from Dame Lillard to Thon Maker to they're all in there as well. And right next to those current elite athletes is my 65-year-old golfing dad. So like he is 65 and he's still trying to be better than he was yesterday. He's had a career playing on the PGA Tour and the Champions Tour. He's, you know, been the Northwest PGA Section Player of the Year 15, 16 times. He's one of the best. And people are constantly asking him, it's like, when are you going to slow down? When are you going to stop? And people like him, they don't know how to because they're addicted to self-improvement. And I think when the daily process of improving yourself becomes more addicting than the outcome of winning a tournament or winning a championship, that's when you can be great. And so I think what I've stolen from him is this. I'll tell a story. This last year, he's 65 years old and he's playing in the Washington State Open. So that's not a senior event. That's open to everyone. There's, you know, current tour players that go and play in the Washington State Open. And he was coming off about a 4 to 5 month back injury where he couldn't even practice. And so he was committed to getting his body right and to visualizing. And so he was really scared going into this tournament. Am I going to even be able to finish? He hadn't been able to play a full round of golf in months. And so he goes into the tournament and he's playing well, but he's really having a mental battle. Do I even belong here? Is this it? Am I done now? Am I now too old? And so he's in the final group, the final day, and I'm actually caddying for him on the final day. And he's playing with this guy who's the player of the year the last year, who's 4 shots ahead of him going into the last day. And through the first 9 holes, my dad's playing quite poorly because there's lots of doubts in his mind. Like, this guy's younger than me. Can I hit it as far anymore? Is this it? Can I still compete? And so he's still down 4 shots. And then going on to the 9th hole, it's a downhill par 5, tree line, over water, second shot. The other dude just rips a drive. Then my dad rips a drive. And my dad said, you know what? I'm done being afraid. I've never done it from a place of fear. He said, I'm going to go all in. And if I fail, I'm not going to baby my back. I'm not going to try to play conservative so I embarrass myself with the highest score. He said, I'm going all in. He's like, my identity is I'm a warrior. I'm a champion. And that's who I am. I'm going to commit to that without holding back, because he had been holding back previously. And so he rips a 3-metal 265 yards within 3 feet of the pin on this par five. This young guy freaks out, hooks it into the water. My dad makes an eagle. The dude makes a bogey. And all of a sudden, the dude that he was playing against got scared and falls apart in the back nine. My dad goes on a tear, goes from four down to winning the Washington Open by 3 shots. And I think that moment and seeing that honestly gave me inspiration to be courageous, to move away from something that I've done really well for a long time, running the whole basketball side of PGC basketball. And I was really good at it. And it was really comfortable. And people looked to me as credible and an expert in the field. It was a wonderful platform. And many people would think I'd be stupid to walk away from that. But I had to commit and go all in on an identity. I'm not improving anymore at this. I've mastered this thing. Like, I could run this back for the next 20 years of my life. And people would think I'm cool and smart and awesome, but it wasn't challenging me anymore. Mm-hmm. And I said, so what can I do that scares the crap out of me? What can I do that my dad would do at 65, was stepping up with a hurt back, and he could have to withdraw, or he could shoot an 85. He could tarnish his legacy. What can I do like that? And so I think that mindset from day to day, running towards fear, running towards embarrassment, as opposed to away from it, is what I've learned from my dad. Is it's better to bet on yourself and do something that's really hard and scary, because at the very least, even if you fail, you will have gotten better out of it. As opposed to when we don't do things that are scary, we tend to stay the same.
That's an awesome story. And I remember hearing you talk about that earlier, but this idea of how do you just go all in on something, almost like you said, if you're a gambler, if you're a betting person, and it's like, hey, whatever happens. And you said, when you become addicted to the process of getting better rather than focusing on the outcome, you generally find more success anyway. So I think that's such a good nugget for people to take away. And it leads me to this next step. So now you've been doing, let's call them fly-ins, for lack of a better word, to go work with a team for 2 or 3 days, and then you're gone. You go do it somewhere else. And what I want to know is, what are the themes that you have seen when you have arrived, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're now getting a peek behind the curtain and you're there to help them grow their program. What are the themes that you're noticing that you said people have the same season, 12 seasons in a row, if you could, 1, 2, 3. And then what is the recipe that you could offer? And not just from a lock left or race in space, but you need to do these 3 things, no matter what your program is, no matter what your sport is, like, this is the foundation. Could you offer both of those for us?
Really good question. Thank you for asking it. And with complete respect for the courage that these coaches that are flying me in have had, because many coaches would not hand their program over to an outsider, especially an outsider that's an expert, because of how it might make them look. Right? It's, oh, this guy just came in and he's saying things different than I've said for the last 10 years. Or, oh, he's coming in and he is more charismatic, or he has more knowledge or information. A lot of times coaches are afraid of how it might make them look. And so it takes unbelievable courage and humility for a coach to bring in a consultant or an outside expert. And so every coach that has done that is so far ahead of their competition already that I have a ton of respect for them. Now, that being said, the battle that we have to fight in the first 30 minutes, and what I observe from the coaches, is still fear. And so for everyone listening, your fear of trying something new and failing, your fear of what your parents or boosters might think of doing something new and different, your fear of your players buying in to what you're teaching, your fear of your staff, your fear that your staff have feelings or dogs in the fight or their own perceptions. That fear is the number one thing that I have observed that's holding programs back. And so what I'm able to do with the fly-in is all of that fear can get put on me and not on them. Mm-hmm. And so we can completely change their players in 2 to 3 days. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable, the progress. I just got a text yesterday from a program I just left. And the coach said, oh my goodness, we've made more progress in the 2 days that you were here than we did in the last 3 seasons. Mm-hmm. And it's not because I'm so special. It's just because I get to leave. And so I have no fear. And when I have no fear, then the players have no fear, then the coaches have no fear. And then we make significant progress immediately. And the proof is in the pudding. If you see it working, it's just working. So that's the biggest draw, the biggest obstacle. So what are the themes? I'm going to give you four themes, and it's going to be easy to remember because it's what Savvy is built on as these four principles. The S in Savvy is an acronym. Simplicity wins. Simplicity wins. You can go far and fast if you simplify your message and simplify how many things you're working on. Every coach I've ever worked with is too complex. Every single one. And they have too much crap in their mind, and they throw out the concept or the drill or the principle when it doesn't work the first time. Simplicity wins is this: pound the stone. For anyone that's ever worked on stone, like, you might have the chisel on that stone with your hammer, and you might pound that stone 1,000 times, mm-hmm. right? And the first 999 times, all these little chips, you don't see anything significant happening, right? Mm-hmm. But that 1,000th hit, massive stone sheared away. Mm-hmm. Most coaches, most players, most people stop pounding the stone long before they see the breakthrough, because improvement's not a straight line. There's not a linear relationship between reps and improvement. You flatline, you plateau for a long time, and then at some moment you get a breakthrough. And so most coaches, they don't see improvement. They move on to something else. That doesn't work. That doesn't work. Most players, same thing. So simplify, go all in on whatever it is that you simply want to improve this year, and pound the freaking stone. And so you see massive breakthroughs. Simplicity wins. You don't go and tap a bunch of different places. The second principle that I think really helps coaches is this belief. And you mentioned it. Adversity strengthens. It's the A in Savvy, S-A-V-I. Adversity strengthens. When practice gets messy, when there's hard conversations, when there's frustrations and pushback, that's the moment you're onto something good. No sports movie ever was a box office hit about the team with the most talent that went through their entire team and everything felt good and easy, and they skated to the championship and won by 20. That movie's never been made because that story sucks. Right? it sucks because the natural skepticism would be like, I can't relate to that. That's not what real life is like. Mm-hmm. The best movies are what we can relate to. Really hard stuff happens. You battle around until finally you overcome this crazy adversity. So like, when you feel adversity, when you feel flack, you're on the right track. You're on the right track because that's how you win. Because if you're on a path with lots of obstacles and lots of doubt and things are really messy, most people on that path will stop walking the path. And if you can just keep walking that path and lean into the flack and lean into the adversity day in and day out, you can take more pain than anybody else. That's how you win. That's how you win. You don't win by finding the easier path ever. And so that's why most coaches love two-line layups. That's why most coaches love three-man weave. That's why most coaches love defensive shell drill. Mm-hmm. Because they can control it and make it look pretty. And then they go home and lay their head down at night and be like, yep, my team got better today. No, you didn't. You're lying to yourself, coach. Your team didn't get better today. Your team only gets better if it was messy and hard. That's when you get better. You only develop new muscle when you rip your muscles apart and tear your body up. You don't get better when you work out at a comfortable level. That's just maintaining. But you just felt good about yourself. And I'd use a different word if I knew the audience, but it's just making yourself feel good. That's all it is. So that's adversity strengthens. Okay. The V stands for victories defined. If other people define victory, if you ascribe to the victory that society has set for you, like, this is what a successful person looks like, or you need to win this many games to be victorious. If that's the victory you're chasing, you'll never achieve true and long-term victory, and you won't do something special. Because you're finding it being defined by others, and usually it's outcome-based. The only way to do something special is to find your victories in your processes, mm-hmm. in your daily habits, and in the Mamba mentality. And Kobe said this about the Mamba mentality. The Mamba mentality is a journey, not a destination. External definitions of victory is a destination, a championship, a win-loss record, a job, a higher-paying salary, getting so many kids signed to Division I, whatever, okay? Those are outcome-based. But the Mamba mentality that Kobe taught us was just be better than you were yesterday. just be better than you were yesterday. And having processes in place, creating a competitive culture in your practice where there's things that you're scoring and winning that are visible, getting very specific with what is each player bringing every single day to practice and having high standards and accountability to that. Being really clear with your coaching staff, how do they win the day? Mm-hmm. If your coaching staff coaches don't know how they win the day, then you've already lost. Mm-hmm. If they're just stumbling through trying to coach what they care about, you haven't done a good job managing and leading your program. Have a clear victory for every one of your coaches. That's when you know that you're on the journey to excellence. And then the I, and we've talked a lot about this, so I won't need to talk a lot about it. The I stands for identity commits. Once you've clearly defined your victory, that's your identity. Now it's just a problem of, can you fully commit to that every single day? Or do you get distracted or discouraged, or do you get a little bit conflicted, or do you lose sight of it? Like, going all in. The greatest distance in the world is the distance between knowing and doing. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's the greatest distance in the world. That's what identity commits is. And like, committing is a muscle that you strengthen. And really committing is this: if you know that you're going all in, when you can act in opposition to your feelings. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We talk a lot to everyone, players included, but I think we need to talk to coaches more about what mental toughness is. Every coach says, I want players that are more mentally tough. Coaches are some of the most mentally weak people I know. Man, I speak from that as experience, right? Like, acting in opposition to our feelings. A referee makes you feel upset. Do you act in opposition to those feelings or not? That's mental toughness or mental weakness, right? A player makes you feel frustrated and you yell at them. Do you act in opposition to your feelings or not? Like, we want our players to be mentally tough. We got to model that. You cannot give away what you don't possess. And we can never expect anything from our players that we don't supermodel times 10. So that's the principles that I try to, in action, coach coaches on.
All right. I'm going to remind you of a question that we're going to come back to.
Okay.
But because you said something, we have to tackle that right now. So I want to come back to, hey, these are the three things you can do, low-hanging fruit every day, that's going to make you better instantly in whatever you define success to be. That's what I want to come back to. But what I want to tap into before I forget, because I have elite level ADD, is, can you give tangible examples of what a player victory on a given day would look like and what a coach victory would look like on a given day? Two or three of each, so that coaches who are listening can actually start to define those for their coaches and their players.
Perfect. So yes, first on the players should come up with them on their own. So one player victory would be, are you going to be the captain of touches today? A victory would be if our team, because of your reminders, because of your modeling, because of your energy and effort into it, our team gets more touches today than they did yesterday. More high fives, more fist bumps, more shoulder bumps, more touches today. That would be a player victory. Another player victory would be precision. You're the captain of precision today. Can you make sure that we touch more lines, or more precise with our movements, actually freeze our finish on shots, whatever the point of precision is? Can you be the captain of precision today? That would be your victory. It's things that are complete within our control. What would not be a player victory would be, can you make more threes than you did yesterday? Mm-hmm. Can't control it. But things that are completely within your control. Can you be the captain of our physicality today? Like, we hit screens harder, we bulldoze rebounds harder, whatever it is, can you be a captain of physicality? So I think that would be an example of a player victory. A captain of a coach victory would be, let's say that assistant coach number one is responsible for our rackers on offense. Right? So that would be, can your victory be getting our rackers to catch the ball in the speed zone more than we did yesterday? Instead of coming back to the ball and catching the ball in the bolt zone, can we get our rackers up and catching the ball in the speed zone in this specific, you know, competition, 5-on-5 to 5, let's measure it. We got 50% in the speed zone yesterday. Let's get 55% in the speed zone today. It's not, did they win the game? It's not, did they get more assists? It's just completely an effort thing, a focus thing. So that would be specific victories for players and coaches. But I think players and coaches should define them, because most, especially assistant coaches, they go into practice and they just coach practice. They don't have anything that they own. And so, like, the whole concept of competitive cauldron is, do you measure things so that you can improve things? That's what a competitive cauldron is. So those would be specific examples of that.
Okay. Love those. And I'm going to state this in case it was not understood. Those victories as defined should be within the structure and philosophy of the system of whatever you're doing. So if you miss that out there, they have to fit with what you're doing. They can't be completely off kilter where they're attacking a different goal. So bringing us back then to all coaches of basketball specifically, but other sports as well. These are things that you need to be doing if you want to move the needle.
Yeah, absolutely. Define, process, and measure. Three things that will absolutely guarantee improvement this season. Define. You must have clear and sticky language around anything that is important to your program. Here's how you know if you've defined it or not. If I were to line up your 12 players outside of your office, coach, and bring them in and say, define your offensive transition number one principle in 7 seconds or less. And I wrote it down and brought those players in one at a time. Would all 12 players have the same definition, yes or no? If the answer is no, you haven't yet defined it. You haven't yet defined it. The ability to define it and then your players to speak on it with the same words and have the same lens will determine if you're rowing the boat in the same direction or rowing in different directions. Most coaches fall down and fail on that. So what would be three things that every coach should define? Here it is, simple. Offensive philosophy, defensive philosophy, role. That's it. Like, that's where you start simply. And why should you start that simply? Because most coaches haven't done that. My offensive philosophy that I teach coaches to start with for the race and space, our shots from our spots with on our time with our people. Our shots from our spots and our time with our people. That's pretty memorable. Why can't every player say that, right? Mm-hmm. Now, of course, within that, there's more definition, but everyone should be saying that because then we can say, hey, that wasn't our shot. Hey, that's not our spot. That's not our time, and you're not our people. Like, and they define it. And then it's the same thing for a defensive philosophy. Mm-hmm. And then finally, role ID. Like, every coach across every sport has a significant room for improvement on role identification. Because Dante has got to be able to say his role, but I've got to be able to know Dante's role as well. Otherwise, I can't play with Dante. Mm-hmm. I can't play effectively with him. What's his role? Is he a one read, two read, three read, four read, five read player? Is he a rabbit racker, drag and lock? What is he? Because when I know his role and he knows his role, then he can be successful in that role. Mm-hmm. Not every player can be the star of the team, but every player can star in their role, but they will never star in the role unless it's defined. So that's what I mean by define. Mm-hmm. Anything you want to dig into on that one, or should we rock into process?
No, let's go right into it and then we'll circle back.
Cool. Do you have a process that's independent of you that is strengthening every single day the things most important to your program? One example of this would be vitamins. I coach coaches into having 15 to 30 minutes at the beginning of every practice where their players do their vitamins. Vitamins are good for you. Vitamins are something you take every single day. And whatever is the most important thing for your success must be in the vitamin. A vitamin is something that coaches must do every single day. So let me just ask you real quick, Justin.
Yes.
If you went three offensive player skills for this season that are imperative for your team's success, what would be the three that you would say are imperative?
Shooting.
Yep.
Passing.
Yep.
Ball handling.
Beautiful. So there must be a shooting, passing, and ball handling drill, and then that would fit into your system, your offense. So let me even go deeper. And if we're working together, I would dig into more of those. Like, actually, let's do it. It's fun. If you had to pick one shot on the floor, what would be the one shot that you think would make the biggest difference if you guys can make that shot?
Obviously threes. And then from where? Well, see, and again, this is jaded because in your deal, you have the money spots in the corner. Yeah. But in the professional leagues, that's a shorter shot. In high school, it's all the same. So truth be told, I think everybody's comfort zone is in a different place. I would like guys to be able to drill threes from their spot of most comfort and then know to hunt that particular spot.
Beautiful. This is key. So then have you yet, and I know I'm digging into you, but this is just what I do, okay? This is adversity strengthens. Have you yet, I know it's early in your season, have you yet gotten a sheet with each player's name and their spot, their set?
Not yet, because right now we're just getting volume up to track what their makes are so that we can see who should be shooting and who shouldn't be passing.
Beautiful. So when you get through that process, I love that you're in that process. I would encourage every coach to get in that process. Then shooting needs to be defined even more specifically. Mm-hmm. If Justin is getting most of his shots in our offense from the right action spot, the right slot, whatever, mm-hmm. okay? And that's where he's going to be getting most of it. That's where he needs to be doing his vitamin shooting. And if Tyler's in the left corner, Tyler needs to be getting most of his shots in the left corner. Most coaches just shoot shots and right. everyone shoots the same shot. Like you're getting a poor return on investment. That's what I mean by establish a process. Yep. And so then even more so, then is there any sort of action or movement that's getting that shot? So mm-hmm. if I'm the Dragon, I'm getting most of my shots from the action spots off of sprints from half court. Mm-hmm. So then I should be getting the shots like that.
Right.
You know, we've all thrown out game shots from game spots at game speed, but what the heck does that mean? Most coaches aren't doing it. So that's what I mean by process for shooting. Okay, yeah, we got to do shooting, but those type of shots. Okay, passing, same thing, mm-hmm. right? Your rackers are probably making passes from the world and they're working on their hook passes mm-hmm. and their flick passes mm-hmm. without stopping and pivoting. Mm-hmm. Whereas your locks or whatever, I'm using my terms that I know, right. you got your own terms. They're just going to be working on two outs or click passes from the corner to get one more. Lock it in. Mm-hmm. If you really want to get a great return on investment, that's where high clarity comes. High clarity leads to high performance.
Right.
And creativity comes from constraint. I've got an orange tree I'm looking at right here in my backyard.
Yep.
In order to get really good oranges, I got to prune off branches every single year.
Right.
Because when I prune branches and I constrain this tree, it grows stronger. Players are the same way. Like the race in space is a player development system mm-hmm. at its heart. Because when I constrain them, I say, here's your path for development. Become good at knocking down corner threes. Then become good at a peak fake and attacking a closeout. Then become good at stopping and making reads at the end of your drive. When you constrain and focus all of your energy on getting good at one skill, you get good at that skill a lot faster. And so that's what I mean by a process.
Right.
So your vitamins have your three main skills, but then you got to get specific to player roles. Mm-hmm. And I would really just encourage every coach listening here, role work, not R-O-L, but R-O-L-E, have role work. And most coaches have, especially in basketball, they're like, let's put our guards down here, our posts down here and get shots. Waste of time. Mm-hmm. Get them in their roles and get more specific. And everyone needs a player development plan and right, they're right. knocking off what they're doing. And in season, I go 75-25 with your process.
Right.
75% is get good at what your current role is. Right, 25% right. is sandbox time. Try to get right. better at the skill you need for your next role. And right, that way you get to be on the player's team, right?
Right
so like
right.
Justin, you got Dame on your team and Dame's like, oh coach, I really want to become a racker. Right now I'm just a lock. Okay, Dame, here's what you need. You need to have the ball handling ability to be able to get to the paint against one defender whenever you want to. You need right. one go-to move, the ability to stop and make good reads. Right. Go work on that. That's how you become a racker. I'm on your team, bro. I want to help you with this. Right. And then right. we're not like constraining people. We're actually helping them level up. So that would be number two measures. Or sorry, it'd be number two process. One, define it. Two, to get a process in place in every practice so that you're getting better at your definitions. And three, measure everything. Winston Churchill said, no matter how great the strategy, one should occasionally look at the results. Yeah. And so a lot of times you're like, yeah, this is just a great strategy. It's a great strategy. Trust the process. Don't trust the process if you're not getting any results. Like right. your process should be getting you some results. And right. so ensuring that you have ways to measure in very specific, like two real simple ones that I'll throw out for measurements that I love that I put in with every one of the teams that I do these fly-ins, this work with mm-hmm. is our shooting ladder mm-hmm. and our weekly wins. Mm-hmm. Our shooting ladder and our weekly wins. So the shooting ladder is as simple as this. At least twice per practice, we're going to do a war game where there's going to be a competitive shooting competition where you're trying to knock off the person in front of you.
Mm.
It's not just get a score and list your scores. Maybe you take your first two, three practices to get scores, take the cumulative score. My total score is 110 after mm-hmm. two, 3 days of practice. Your score is 200, right?
Right.
So now we've got an order, we've got
right.
a batting order.
Right.
Now, from that point forward, we just go odds and evens, okay?
Right.
An odd shooting ladder is where one plays two and two gets a chance to knock off one and take mm-hmm. their spot.
Right.
An even ladder is where your number one person an odd ladder, my apologies, where the number one person gets a bye. They're our best shooter. They get a bye. You've earned it. And then two plays three. So three gets a chance to knock off.
Right.
In every war game, you flip odds and evens. So they're always moving up and down. Now, you as a coach, what I suggest to coaches is get rid of yellow light shooters. I think that's a waste of time. You're just playing to somebody's head. You're mm-hmm. a green light shooter or you're not. Mm-hmm. You can decide if you need to shoot more threes or not. And if you need to shoot more threes, you say top eight on the ladder, you got the green light, every wide open shot, you're shooting it. And if you're not a green light shooter, you don't ever get to shoot threes. And so they're going to, you want to shoot threes? I want you to shoot threes, get in the gym and get in the top eight. For example, and if you don't know these numbers off the top of your head, Justin, just throw out a number. Okay. The last full season you had, what would you say was your team's 3-point field goal percentage?
32.
Beautiful. 32. Now, what would you guess? You may know this number, you might not. And if you don't, I've got the average for most high school teams. A couple of years ago, most coaches don't have this off the top of their head. Do you know what your team's points per possession was a couple of years ago?
0.87.
Yeah, because 0.85 is the average for most high school
teams. Right, and I lied. We were 29% from three.
All right, beautiful. 29% and 0.87. All right, this is key. So most coaches would be like, you know what? 29%, that's not that good, man. We probably shot too many threes. We need to get more stuff at the rim. That's how most coaches would think about that relationship. Okay, check this out. And this is across the board. Basketball coaches, you all need to shoot more threes. If you shot 29% from the three-point line, I'm just going to round that up to 30 for easy math because I don't want to get my calculator at.
Right, 0.9.
Yeah, 0.9, you're ahead of me. So actually that was some of your most efficient offense was shooting threes.
Yep.
And so most coaches look at 29% and they're like, we got to shoot less threes. No, you need to shoot way more threes. Mm-hmm. And here's what I found as well. When you green light more players and you say you shoot every open three in practice and in games, this is what's happened with every team that I've worked with. I just got back from Denver. And of the 2 days in Denver, the coach was going crazy. Tyler, what did you do? We have never shot this well from three. We did a little bit of shooting stuff, but no, it's a change of their form in 2 days. They were banging threes. It was nuts. He's like, what did you do? What did you do? I'm like, you know what I did. I told everyone to catch the ball and shoot on every single catch. That's all I did. And they shot so much better. Like once you open it up, they're going to shoot better. So every coach I've ever worked with, their team needs to shoot more threes. And so here's how you teach your team to shoot more threes. You have more green light shooters. So let's say that you got 12 players on your shooting ladder, mm-hmm. right? You say, all right, top eight. We're working every week to see who's in the top eight. If you're top eight, you're what I call a two read player or a green light shooter. Mm-hmm. Big advantage, wide open three, you shoot, you shoot, you shoot. I don't care if you missed your last 20. You're right. In the top eight, you shoot. And then if we're still not shooting enough threes, if three times our 3-point field goal percentage is still higher than our points per possession, we need to go to top nine. In top 10, right? Just shoot threes. You don't tell players to get more threes. You actually get more players shooting threes. And you do that until you equalize. Eat three times your 3-point field goal percentage. If that ever gets less than your points per possession overall, then you need to tighten it up. You go from 9 to 8, from 8 to 7, and so on and so forth. That's the easiest way to turn the dials. But that's measuring.
Okay, let me ask you this because we got 3 minutes here and we'll come back. We're going to do a part two. Weekly wins.
Yes.
Wrap that up in a bow and then tell us where they can get more information.
There's two parts to practice. You can read my newsletter, tylercoston.com, if you want the newsletter. Sandbox and war game. Throw sandbox out for a second, just war games. Anything you identify as a war game, players win or lose. Ensure that you're constantly rotating players and lineups so that everyone plays with everyone. Very rarely should you have your top five against your second five. That's a waste of time. Only rarely when you're prepping for a specific game scenario. So you want to make as even teams as possible so everyone plays with the best player. Any war game win goes down on the tally. At the end of the week, your best players will have the most wins. Mm-hmm. If they don't, you may not know what your best players are because the best players are. Okay, it's just a great way to war game it. And so weekly wins determine playing time. That's it. Weekly wins determine playing time. And so that way no one's ever out of the rotation. They just got a shot. Your moment-to-moment success is players compete harder.
Yep.
When players compete harder, they get better habits. Their opponents get better. Your team gets better. When they know that their weekly wins will determine playing time, they compete harder. And it's your job, coach, to create a process that measurement is accurate. That's it. And I have just found this time and time again. But when you have weekly wins and playing time moves according to the weekly wins, your team gets better. When there isn't that, your team stays the same. It's just that simple.
I love that. That's a great way to wrap up. And if you, any area where you want people to follow or get in touch, please drop that now before we sign off.
It's super simple because simplicity wins. Follow me on Twitter at Tyler Coston, TylerCoston. You can sign up for my newsletter there. You can DM me there. If you want to get better, I want to help you get better. And there's a lot of ways I can do that. Just DM me, because I am a one-to-one, person-to-person coach. That's why I'm doing it this way. And I'm excited to work with anybody that wants to get better.
Love it. Thanks for being on today.
All right. Thanks, Justin.
This podcast was also brought to you by teachhoops.com. As coaches, our inboxes get flooded with noise on how to make your program better. Teachhoops.com will get you focused on what needs to get done. One thing you've heard from these podcasts is no matter the experience, you got to keep pushing yourself to be better. Coach Steve Collins will help you direct that noise. He is there to help you. He has the credentials as a coach, and he's never turned down a Teach Hoops member. Sign up for a plan at teachhoops.com and mention us at checkout. This site is here simply to help you be better. Take advantage and see you on the court. Remember, go to teachhoops.com. Drink Element is a healthy alternative to sugary electrolyte drinks. Each grab-and-go stick pack replaces essential electrolytes with no sugar, no coloring, no artificial ingredients, or any other junk. Element is thrilled to be releasing a new limited time flavor this November, Element Milk Chocolate. I drink Element every day to support my workouts and being on the court and in the classroom. As a member of our community, Element has a special offer for you. Claim your free Element sample pack. You only cover the cost of shipping. Get yours today at drinkelement.com/contents.